This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Adam Scalina. And Corey, you're just back from Whistler. You're looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Oh, yeah. Back from Whistler. I've been on like a four-week hiatus here. I can't get my act together. We've been traveling so much for work with offices and expansions and all that stuff. We've had to bring back some of the great episodes of the past to get people updated. Maybe some new listeners that hadn't experienced some of the recent ones. But we're back today with Al Haig, Managing Partner, Impact Commercial. We're doing our six-month check-in. We have it in January. We check in June to find out what's going on in the lending world.
Yeah.
And Al, as always, unpacks it tremendously. But as you said at the top of the show, we were up in Whistler for the William Wright Annual Whistler Retreat. Al was up there as well. We had probably around like 35 to 40 people join us this year. Golfing at Whistler Golf and Country Club on Saturday, which was really hot. We had like a five-hour round out there.
I was going to say,
it was warm. It was very, very warm. And then some people enjoyed the Scandinave Spa, which seemed like definitely a much better idea when we're sitting in the middle of the fairway. I wasn't sitting in the middle of the fairway. I was in the bush looking for my ball the whole round.
Yeah.
But it was really hot. But I am looking a little tired up there. I go to bed early. After dinner, I'm usually the first guy to bed.
7 p.m. and then you wake up at about 4 a.m.
Yeah, but it was, you're up there making sure everyone's having a good time. You're chasing people around, getting them to the dinners at the right spot, making sure everyone's having a good time. So although as much as it is time away, you're working when you're up there, when you're in my shoes. You're trying to make sure everyone's happy, making sure everyone's at the right events at the right time. Dinner comes on time. People are at dinner, getting golf shirts distributed. So it was a good time as always as part of our annual Whistler retreat.
You're like a wedding planner, basically.
I wish I could take as much credit for that, but we've got some amazing people at William Wright Commercial that help put it on every single year, pull it all together.
Nice.
I just the idiot that signs the checks.
Well, Corey, yeah. And like you said, we have Alan Hagon. He's from Impact Commercial, I should say. Lots of things we touch on today. We talk about rates. We talk about tariffs. We talk about immigration. We talk about which markets are exciting, which asset classes are outperforming, which asset classes are getting beat up. Lots of interesting takeaways. I think everybody's going to really enjoy this episode. So stay tuned for that.
Enjoy, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Al, and the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Mark your calendar.
That's right, Matt, because Atlin's grand opening is happening Saturday, September 13th from 12 to 5 p.m. at Zentera's Sales Gallery in South Surrey at 2411 160th Street.
Join us for refreshments, food, and live entertainment. And Adam, the Beat 94.5 is going to be live on location.
Atlin is Zentera's newest condo community coming to West Clayton and features studio to three-bedroom homes, starting from just $325,000 and only a 10-minute walk to the new SkyTrain station.
Buy now and get over $50,000 in inclusions. Air conditioning, vinyl flooring upgrade, built-in closet organizers, Samsung appliances with a gas range, washer, dryer, storage locker, and more.
Atlin offers amazing amenities with over 30,000 square feet of outdoor space, including three children's playgrounds, plus a rooftop patio, a gym, co-working space, party room, games room, and even an on-site daycare with priority access for residents.
Just 10% down secures your home with move-in, in 2028.
Come down to the Presentation Center on Saturday, September 13th to tour the sales gallery and show home to see what all the hype is about with your chance to secure your own home at Atlin.
Visit atlincondos.ca for more details. That's atlincondos.ca for more details.
Okay, so we're here with Alan Hegg. He is the founding partner at Impact Commercial and a past guest fan favorite. Good to have you back, Al. Can you start maybe by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you, as always, for, you know, allowing me to come on here. I can't believe it's, you know, I feel like it's been like 6 or 7 years now. moving on is, yes, my name is Alan Haig, founding partner along with two other fabulous guys here at Impact Commercial Group, boutique mortgage brokerage in, you know, based in BC, but also, you know, doing a lot more stuff in Alberta in the last sort of 24 months. But we are continuing to do all sorts of different stuff. Income properties, which is definitely the flavor of the day right now, but anything with CMHC, multifamily, industrial, we're doing even a lot of office these days. Some of that that asset is coming back, you know, quite nicely. So very active all across BC and Alberta right now.
So Al, we kick off the year every year with you guys coming on, setting us up for the year to be interest rates financing wise. We're about 6 months into the year, and I think it's fair to say that 2025 hasn't really gone as planned. I think a lot of people late 2024 had a lot of excitement for 2025, felt like we were getting off on the right foot, and then this word called tariff entered the equation. Mr. Trump and Mr. Elon Musk started to have their way down south and try to tackle the world. That, I don't think, went to plan, as if anyone watched the Twitter war last week. Al, what's happening in the lending world? Like, can you break this down and just give us some Cole's notes of what has transpired over the past 6 months?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I can honestly say is there has been far too much going on, right? Like, in a normal market, we generally have one or two, you know, dominating themes. For most of, say, or at the end of 2022 and into 2023, the dominating theme was inflation.
Yeah.
So we had run that up there, and then what we needed to do is the Bank of Canada and all the central banks that are affected by, you know, 8-9% inflation is that they have to increase their central bank rates. So it's called the overnight rate. So you saw a massive spike up from, you know, 25-50 basis points all the way to 5%. And then that affected everybody stuff. And interest rates on the mortgage side, they just went all the way up from 3% to, you know, 7.5% for something. But that was like when it's fairly easy to sort of forecast a little bit about what interest rates are going to be and, you know, what is going to happen for the real estate when you have one or two dominant trends. Right now, I can tell you that there's probably like 5 or 6 themes that are just all interacting. And again, for the layperson out there, is like, even I get confused right now on where, you know, what's pulling the string today. You know, sometimes what we're going to be having is, I can say some of the dominant themes right now are, you know, a Trump tariff. You've got this stuff here. You know, you're looking then in California right now, where I guess Trump has sent in the National Guard. And so you're dealing with a little bit of social unrest in regards to his immigration policies. You also have really remarkably strong and resilient employment growth, even though, you know, the market is kind of, you know, forecasting potential, recessionary forces from tariffs, right? But, you know, how is that all factored in there? So we're just dealing with so much going on right now in the markets that for most of us is we're not going to be able to see clear long-term trends given the variability that's in there right now. But we've sort of, over the last 3 to 4 months, ever since sort of basically was kind of like March, April, when we saw, you know, rates kind of sort of calm down. But ever since then, the Trump tweets, the Trump tariffs, the uncertainty of that has just driven interest rates up you know, a little bit more than we expected, but within the band, right? And so this is where we are believing that our, you know, band is for interest rates going to be about where it is right now. The yield curve is normal. So everything is like checking out okay. Like employment's all right, inflation's all right. So we're at what I think is a very sustainable interest rate environment at this time here. Might go up another 10, 20, you know, basis points, or it could go down, you know, 10, 20 basis points. But we're in a healthy, stable environment right now, which I basically for all the listeners is that these are the rates that you should be expecting in the long term, are the rates that are right now.
Do you think that prior to the tariffs, the market was coming back in the commercial market? Because I feel like in residential, we had a good start to the year. Everybody was really optimistic, and then tariffs kind of crushed everything. Is that your take on the commercial market as well? And I'll put that question to both of you, actually.
Like I can tell you, because I was looking at it the other day, a little residential mortgage rate update. And I've got my residential mortgage coming up next year in May. And so I think briefly earlier on this year, we had a five-year residential mortgage in the threes. Like it got down to 3.99 or 3.95, which was a little bit of a psychological game change on that. And so, you know, based on what this article was mentioning, is a lot of, you know, buyers kind of gone back into the market at that point in time. People were doing the refinancing on the residential side. At that time as well, like, you know, commercial real estate was benefiting from it because we were starting to get the five-year commercial mortgage down to the 4.5%, where right now we are hovering just below 5. We're kind of like, 4.95. So it's just like you get to these psychological levels. And I think that's what drove the early market activity in both resi and commercial this year. And it's also what's taking sort of pushing everybody into a pause right now.
Well, Al, you may be able to comment on this too, on the side of it. And I second a lot of your thoughts there. I think one thing too that I think has been sort of an underlining challenge we've had in the commercial side is we've had no good inventory. I don't want to say there's no good inventory. I should say that. It's been challenging to find properties that people are excited to buy with 2025 pricing, because it feels like a lot of vendors are just kind of like, ah, it's not a good time to sell. I won't sell. So I feel like demand's quite high. There's just not a good lot of properties to transact on. And when you see a good one that come out that does make sense to transact on, it feels like they almost get multiple offers on it. Are you guys kind of like, when you're dealing with vendors and stuff like that, are you seeing type of properties maybe where people are coming to you on the buy side looking for capital where they're like, hey, I was one of three offers on this property. I really need to get this to go.
Yeah. So what I can sort of say is what we are seeing, and maybe I'm going to answer this a little bit different way. There's a lot of liquidity out there. Lenders are wanting to lend like you wouldn't believe. This is the most risk on that they have been in multiple years. We are seeing a lot of well-capitalized, institutional and private wealth that are looking to, you know, go after some quality assets. We are also seeing for those quality assets, you know, they're not always listed, right? And, you know, some of these things that are these quality assets that are being off-market transactions. And maybe Corey, for the listeners, is what is an off-market, you know, transaction that happened? So it's just like we are seeing a bunch of those things there and that are happening. The assets that are actually getting listed that are, you know, really quite good, yeah, they are getting multiple bids. And you might have been teeing it up for me on just a recent, transaction that closed in May where there was multiple bids, and it ended up being that the purchasers, you know, you need to be very aggressive with your terms. This one, in fact, was an unconditional offer, so there was no subject to financing. You know, we had all the required due diligence and the consultant reports well in advance, but we didn't need to go into a lengthy 60, 90, 120 day completion cycle. We were able to put it under contract, or our client was able to put it under contract very quickly, very aggressively, and you know, we obviously allowed it to complete within 60 days. So for those like high quality assets, that's kind of how aggressive you got to be in this market.
I'm just thinking right now, like, how is financing or impacting the decision of purchasers right now? And just to piggyback on that question, which asset classes right now are the easiest to finance?
So starting with the latter first is kind of like almost anything but land. This is really where we're kind of going into. So we are very aggressive, you know, lending up lenders for multifamily rental, although that one is starting to show some cracks from, you know, vacancy rate, just a lot of supply is coming up.
Right.
And, you know, a little bit of a big thank you to our federal government and our provincial government and our municipal governments for, you know, completely crushing demand on rental, because we are hearing, you know, a lot of new builds, you know, the absorption of those rentals is struggling right now. So their kind of decisions are really starting to affect, you know, the market and the developers in a major negative way. And I think there's probably going to be a lot less construction coming up of new buildings, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years due to those policies that they've enacted. Separating my, you know, personal political opinions, moving over to industrial, still quite strong. Retail is kind of the darling right now. You know, from, you know, lenders wanting to get a little bit more exposure with that, like lease rates just keep going up. There's an experience that needs to be done with brick and mortars versus it all being Amazon and online. But we're actively seeing those three. So multifamily rental, industrial, and retail are the three top ones. Office is making a little bit of a comeback. You just need to, you know, make it that it's like, you know, good quality tenants, good long-term profiles, good borrower covenants. And we are getting very attractive lending terms for, you know, office buildings. So we are, you know, it's starting to come back. I feel like the office buildings have kind of, you know, they troughed from a value, right? They're, you know, they've got a hit floor and potentially coming back up. You know, a bunch of announcements by major corporations are saying, you know, you got to go return to work 4 days a week, 5 days a week, which is being obviously positive for that one there. So those assets are doing quite well, you know, which is good. Now, because I have droned on a little bit on that one there, I can't remember the first question.
Yeah, the first question was just how financing is impacting like buyers' decisions right now. So like what kind of considerations are they thinking about and what's limiting them in the market right now to pull the trigger?
Yeah, and so that's a great question. Most prudent investors, they have some return metrics that they want to, you know, have. And again, I don't want to get too much into it, but there are investment metrics such as return on equity, IRR, which stands for internal rate of return, and that can be leveraged IRRs, unleveraged IRRs. There's just a whole bunch of different kind of ways that people can look at, you know, what their returns are going to be. Obviously, when you start looking at like a return on equity, and you have to look at it, okay, the purchase of a property is $10 million, you've got, you know, a debt of say 7, and you've got equity of 3. Hopefully listeners can carry along there. And it is not equity, because you only got $3 million in, it does make a difference. You know, if you compare another property that is saying $10 million, but you only get $6 million in mortgage and you got to put in $4 million in equity. So the returns can, you know, are generally higher when you have a lower equity sort of denominator. It kind of makes it, you know, much more profitable or a higher return on that. And so this is like a big part of the market where, you know, if you can invest separately into a real estate income trust that's getting you 7-8%, is you sort of pop it over into your commercial property purchase and you want to try to get something similar to that or more based on the equity that you contribute to the property purchase. So you're just, it's like a comparative analysis of what you can do on one area and then what is it going to be on this one. So the more mortgage you can get, the higher the returns on that particular asset purchase is going to be.
So like cash on cash returns.
You got it.
There you go. So I'll just ask one quick question before I think I cut Adam off there. I think he had a question for you. Well, how do lenders look at what's more important, cash on cash or IRR?
Lenders don't give a darn.
There you go. Okay.
Right? What they are looking at it is they just want the security of the property's income. So through leases, you know, can that service the the agreed upon mortgage interest rate and amortization and in general monthly, you know, debt obligations. So they do not look at the return expectations too much, you know, when they're doing it. You know, they yes, it's obviously nice. Lenders want to lend to healthy projects in general. And so, you know, it is nice that we do add is some kind of return expectations for clients on that. It does strengthen the business case for doing, you know, the loan, but it's not their priority.
And would you say, like, is your job more challenging right now than it has been in previous years?
100%.
Like, where does it become more challenging?
It becomes more challenging because there just seems to be a whole lot more, we call it hair on deals. Like, things just aren't, like, the leases have kind of gotten, you know, there's more addendums to some of these leases, you know, demolition clauses, termination clauses, a lot more unpredictability in some of the property's income, which is out there. So that just takes a lot more, you know, investigative, you know, work. And some of these leases can be like 20, 30 years old. And so you have to go back through all the different leases to make sure, okay, what are we actually signing up for as somebody purchasing it? So the complexity of the deal is getting that much harder. You know, interest rates are also about 2%, 2.5% higher than they were, you know, 4 years ago when we had the heyday. So it's like a lot harder to get things, you know, get things to work on that aspect. There's still a very challenging, you know, time trying to get properties under contract. You know, Corey knows full well on this thing here. He sees it more than I do. It's like, you know, we call it the bid ask between the, you know, the seller's expectations and the buyer's expectations is still something that's somewhat challenging. You know, to try to narrow the gap, you know, getting more creative on the financing is something where we try to do to support, you know, the transaction. And those are the things that you just have to, you know, this is the art of the deal, trying to get them all done. So there's just a whole bunch of different things that kind of come into it. Even, you know, that's not even counting all the stuff that lenders are doing right now with the enhanced regulatory environment. So lenders, and I feel for a bunch of our guys that are, you know, at the lenders, you know, everybody's got a boss and totally understand that lenders have to report into their regulators. But damn, you know, sometimes it takes 2 to 3 weeks just to clear a security, you know, process for, you know, some of the lenders on individuals new to the, to that bank or credit union. So there's just a lot more that goes into any, you know, the deals that are happening right now.
You'd mentioned earlier, Al, that retail's kind of having a moment. Why is that?
I think the easiest answer is that a lot of retail requires a lot of parking. And so my two biggest things is that the parking requirements for retail are just not supported, you know, with, you know, new developments. You just think about it. It's like you got a grocery or drugstore anchored facility. It's like, you know, just say you've got like a Loblaws. It's like how many parking spots do those tenants require? Really tough to put those parking spots on, you know, downtown Vancouver as an example. Like it's just like there's, you know, you got to go like 10 floors of underground parking versus like you're in some of these, you know, these shopping centers where, you know, they've got like, you know, 10 acres, 15 acres, 25 acres. And those things are just so attractive to a lot of the bigger box tenants, you know, that's sort of where you're coming at. We're also sort of seeing is that, you know, more often than not is a lot of that older retail stock is just being demolished to put up mixed use, you know, developments, right? Like it's, you know, how many times have you seen, you know, one or two small, you know, 7-year-old buildings get ripped down and then suddenly you got a whole bunch of little, you know, commercial retail units dotted along bottom with, you know, 50, you know, residential above. So this is why I think retail is having its moment is because I think people are realizing that for a large number of those types of tenants is that they need acreage and they're willing to pay for it, right? You know, I'm invested in one project where, you know, our lease rates when we bought it were $16, $17 and now we're signing up for $35, you know, triple net a square foot. And, you know, I know that Corey can see it on his side as well, is that, you know, retail rates have gone up quite noticeably. And sort of pushing back to Corey, he's like, what are you, Corey, in regards to the retail lease rates, like, what are you seeing on your end there?
Well, I think especially with all these secondary markets where there's so much more demand now than there ever has been, you've seen a big push on it. And I think replacement cost value of a lot of things is so expensive that there's just not really enough supply coming on. Like if you go to, I don't know, maybe say like a Kelowna as an example, where, you know, the price to acquire land probably doubled or tripled over a certain time period. Construction costs rose, but lease rates went up marginally, that people couldn't afford to build stuff. And the margin, when I say marginally, the lease rates weren't climbing at the same rate of the acquisition costs, the financing costs, and the construction costs, that there was just no point in actually buying the land to rebuild something or to build something that would cost me double or triple what I could buy it for. So I think you've had a lack of supply coming on. Obviously, on the residential side, we're seeing it now that projects not getting built that have retail at grade, that will put continuous strain on it. I think coming out of COVID is nobody wanted retail, and everything from data-wise, whether it's appraisals or bank loans, all look at historical data, which didn't look very good. So it scared off a lot of people that didn't look past the forest and see it through the trees. And those who did have come out on the other side really, really well. So you've got strain on supply. You've got retailers coming back into the market. You had a lot of leases that were probably maybe signed below market rates coming out of COVID because people are panicking to keep people. And now moving forward, retail, I think, is extremely strongly well-positioned, especially in a lot of these secondary markets.
When everyone's screaming for more housing,
yeah,
does that just means that if you think about it, like over the next few decades, it's a lot less likely that you're going to see these shopping centers being built, I'm guessing.
That probably has some indication to it, like OCPs and stuff like that. And I think you're seeing a lot of people that own shopping centers like Coquitlam Center or Brentwood or Lougheed, that they're turning them into redevelopments where the shopping amenities still exist, but a lot of that parking lots are now turning into towers to create a more additional. I think if you look downtown, like Coquitlam around city center there, I could be completely off base, but I think this is pretty accurate. I think like the Marcon project alone is around like 1 million square feet between all of their different buildings they're putting. I think it's called Tri-City Central, I think is what it's called. It's around 1 million square feet or up to 1 million square feet or something like that in one project, kitty corner to Coquitlam Center. So you're seeing a lot of these more of these parking lots and all that stuff turn into towers creating housing, and then the malls are becoming like amenities within the communities versus it being a mall with, you know, 700 parking stalls or whatever it is.
Right.
And like just the one thing, and Corey answered that one beautifully, it's like going back to, you know, the housing front is, I think it's important for everybody to understand is we don't have a housing issue when it comes to, you know, 1 and 2 bedrooms that are like $2,500, you know, a month, right? There is lots of housing available. Oh, so I don't want to use the word higher price point, but new construction, you know, it costs a lot of money to do that. Just for developers to make, you know, break even. You know, you say you have to rent that, you know, rental unit at $2,500 just to break even. So that's great. What the market is kind of seeing is that there's this need for people to have affordable rental at $1,500.
Right.
So it's like $1,000 less, right? And this is the conundrum that the market, in our opinion, is in, is there's a massive need for rental at $1,500. But if it costs new, like for-profit developers, just for them to break even, if it costs them if they need to make $2,500 for that unit, you know, they can't subsidize the market $1,000 a month, right? Like that's just not possible. So this is where, you know, I personally believe that, you know, the Lower Mainland is in, is that we have abundance of the higher price rental, and we have, you know, a substantial deficiency of that lower price rental. Kind of going into the, you know, political kind of aspect, is this is where I think our political leaders, they need to, you know, step on the gas and drive, you know, employment, like good, healthy employment. Like, whether or not people like it or not, is that, you know, we are a resource-based country. It would be really good if, Prime Minister Mark Carney could work with the provincial, you know, leadership to go, hey, listen, like, why don't we find a way to raise everybody's, you know, income levels up so that, you know, our the population that can only afford $1,500 may be able to get a slightly better job or a materially better job and be able to pay the $2,500 that, you know, new housing, you know, requires as a to make even, you know, break even return. So this is going to be sort of where our biggest issue is, you know, the society over the next decade is how do we bridge that gap between, you know, the affordable housing that there's a demand for and, you know, the higher cost one, which is just what it costs to actually produce that housing stock.
Al, before we let you go, two more questions. One is where do you see the opportunities in terms of which asset class, and then Second question is, where geographically are you excited about right now?
Oh, so it is and this is something for, I think it's, you got to be opportunistic right now is, you know, there's no single dominant asset class, in my opinion. I think that each one of them, of the retail, the industrial, and the multifamily rental, they have, you know, pockets where, you know, you might be able to have an owner of a property that's in, you know, one of those assets that might be under a little bit of a duress. We've seen, you know, a lot of contagion. We call it contingent liabilities between some owners where they, you know, their idea of diversification was they diversify across the real estate assets, right? It's not diversification where you got cash and, you know, stocks and everything like that. And so, you know, this has kind of hit some of them, you know, harder than, you know, ideal. And so they're having to sell assets, you know, sometimes often below replacement costs on those things. And so there's opportunities to go into, you know, those three asset classes, you know, quite nicely where, you know, where they didn't exist in the past. So it is those that are, you know, have a keen eye on the deals can, are doing some really nice acquisitions right now. The two biggest areas where we're seeing, you know, active, you know, competitive bids are going to be in those secondary markets, as Corey mentioned earlier. Plus, we're seeing a lot more confidence in the Alberta market than we have, you know, in a decade, right? Like it's a market that, you know, seems to be, you know, growing, you know, quite nicely. You know, prices are a lot lower, comparatively speaking, than they are here in the lower mainland. So yields are generally higher. You sacrifice capital appreciation, you know, potential in the future, but, you know, a lot of people have been burned with, you know, a massive deceleration in their values here. So they are just looking for yields. And that's where you can find some of that stuff in those, you know, secondary markets in BC, and then, you know, the, you know, Edmonton, Red Deer, Calgary, Lethbridge. We are seeing, you know, more and more inquiries on those ones.
Well, Al, you know how the game works here. You're about a 15-time guest, I feel like, here on our program. And we've got a six-pack of lighthearted questions that, I'm not going to lie, we've had to completely flip them upside down because you've been on the program so often. So we've kind of got... a dedicated six pack of questions geared towards you, we think, that we have not asked most of our other guests. Do you have a few minutes to hang out with us?
That I do.
All right. First question up, Al. Do the Edmonton Oilers win the cup this year?
100% yes.
That was quick. That was very quick. Yeah.
You know what? McDavid is due.
Al, what is a summer drink that you'd recommend for our listeners?
Oh, you know what? I am going to say it's going to be the Paloma or a margarita, but been on a big tequila kick recently. So those ones are hitting the spot these days.
Got it.
Do the Canucks trade Elias Pettersson before July 1st?
Oh, God, I hope so. Sorry, did I respond too quickly to that one there?
No, that's okay. That's okay. I think we all feel the same.
Yeah, I'm going to rub people the wrong way, but I think we traded the wrong guy on that one there. You know, when JT left out.
I don't think you're the only one that feels that way.
Question number four, Al. When people are visiting BC this summer, where should they vacation?
Oh, man, this is a tough one there. Well, you guys know that, you know, my favorite part of BC is, you know, the area between Penticton and Kelowna. So that's where it is. But I've got some family on the Sunshine Coast, and I got to tell you, if you want to take a week or 2 weeks, decompress, you know, head up to the Sunshine Coast, drop a line in the water, you know, have a couple cold beers in the, you know, on the boat, and just, you know, let the waves rock your day away, man. There's nothing better than that.
You got to go to Smitty's. Smitty's on the water.
Yeah.
It's like the oyster bar. It's like Rodney's Oyster Bar, but on the Sunshine Coast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Got some Palomas too.
All right, Al, if you had no budget, you could buy any car you want. What car are you buying?
Oh, I'm, you know, I grew up in a very heavy British household, so it would be definitely an Aston Martin.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
The older, the better, man. I grew up James Bond, right? So it was these, you know, you gotta have the Aston Martins.
Last but not least, Al, you can buy anywhere in North America right now. Where are you investing?
You know, that's a great question. I am going to, probably for me, is I'm going to say Calgary. I got two reasons on it. Is I got my two oldest kids. They're going to be in Calgary, both of them next year at the University of Calgary. And so there's a family aspect to that one there. And, it's allowed me to get over there probably three or four times over the last 6 to 7 months. And I got to tell you, there's something about the ease of doing business in that market. It's a bit of a refreshing change in some aspects where, things just move a little bit quicker, a little bit more enjoyable. It's a little bit more stable in part of my aspect is that you can buy something at a 6 cap, 6.5 cap versus over here where you're fighting for a 4.5 to a 5, right? So just like your yields are just a little bit more. And I'm kind of gone out of my aggressive stage of, trying to swing for the fences on, some of these speculative type transactions is, I'll take the doubles all day, every day in this market. And so that's where I just feel is like the certainty of a double is where I'm kind of focusing on. And so that would just be probably the one where I just got the most confidence at this time.
Well, it's funny you say that because we were because Al, we were talking about this before we hit the record button. We're at the William Wright Whistler retreat this past weekend and we're on the golf course and an agent that I was golfing with made a really good point. He has a client buying a Starbucks anchored retail property in Alberta that has a cap rate north of 6.5. And a very similar type Starbucks retail anchored investment property in Chilliwack was about a 4.5 cap. Wow. So it was a similar tenant profile, similar age of construction. Granted, this is a market on the outskirts in Alberta, but the cap rate was dramatically higher. And you got to have confidence in Starbucks is going to be able to hold its weight. So, they were excited and thrilled to get a property in Alberta under contract at almost I wouldn't say double, but a very significantly large cap rate versus a similar type asset here in BC. So that just speaks to your point there, Al.
Yeah. Well, the interest rates are the same, right? Like it's getting the same interest rate than Chilliwack as he is in, Calgary. So,
yeah, there you go.
That's the nice double, analogy there.
There you go.
Well, we'll leave it there, Al. Beautiful, but how can people find out more about what you're up to and, of course, Impact Commercial?
I guess it's more of a big shout out, big thank you to, this commercial real estate podcast for a couple of different things. One is you guys being great brand partners. Everybody is able to find me without much hesitation or much issue on the website. Very easy peasy on LinkedIn, no problems. But it is, per my earlier mention of a shout out is, we've actually had a couple of people over the last 2 years reach out to us for employment through the commercial real estate podcast. And I'm happy to say that, big home runs on those two that have joined us over the years. Excellent people. So it is a little bit of a return to favor. So I'm hoping that your viewership can continue to grow because you guys have been awesome. And definitely a shout out to you guys. Well done, Drew.
Well, we appreciate all the support. You've been here since day one and we really, really appreciate that. We're glad to hear it's working out so well as Adam's going to send you an email because the sponsorship rates are doubling. So Adam will send you that email. So it's Al, all joking aside, we appreciate it. When we came to you with this idea a long time ago, you jumped on board right away. You've been a loyal sponsor and supporter of ours since day one. So we're so glad to hear that it's working out.
Awesome, guys. Amazing. All right. Have a great week and be in touch soon.
Okay, thanks, Al. Take care. Bye-bye.
Of course. Bye.
There you have it, folks. Our interview with Alan Haig, managing partner, Impact Commercial. Always love having Al on the show. Always good takeaways.
Palomas.
I know. I didn't. He was up at the Whistler retreat this weekend, and I can't say for sure, but I think he had a margarita, which I think was a close second to his Palomas. But he, he didn't strike me as a Paloma guy.
Yeah.
Margarita, I can see. Paloma, right. I don't know. He caught me off guard there.
Well, it was a very insightful conversation with Al and always great having him on the program. And sounds like, I feel like just everything in our industry is more regulated right now, but it sounds like Al's job has gotten tougher, but there's still a lot of opportunity, it seems like. So, probably a good time to be talking to a mortgage broker about potential opportunities. And interesting, he said Calgary, because obviously there's been a lot of buzz around Alberta.
Yeah.
As a lot of people think there's a lot of opportunity coming. That said, potentials for some risk as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the only thing, like, not that Calgary's a bad market, and obviously I think there's a lot of positives. I think if you look at it from a very high level, that there's a lot of exposure with the oil and gas sector into the States. And obviously if Mr. Trump runs wild with tariffs or tariff talk happens, they probably have a lot of exposure into that country. And it just feels like Calgary, as great as the market is, it feels when the highs are high and the lows are lows, right? So as long as someone's understanding of what they're getting into, and maybe that's all behind us for all we know, but just looking at the historic, the data of how it showed over the years, that as long as people understand what they're getting into, it could be a great investment market. I'll be the first to say, I don't know enough about it to probably make a comment on it with regards to it. Obviously, we follow it very intensely, but I would not call myself an expert by any stretch of the imagination. But it feels like there has to be an Alberta show coming up now, I think.
I think so.
I think we got to reach out to our girls in Alberta.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it's got to happen. Well, Corey, what else before we cut for the day? What's happening with you and how can people find out more about, of course, William Wright Commercial Real Estate Services?
People can reach out to us anytime. They can call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. They can visit our website, williamwright.ca. They can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. Always love hearing from everybody on the program and just real estate in general.
Well, have a great week, everybody. And we're back here next week with another great episode.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Subscribe today.